so off with your question. Yes, sir. You're back here.
You sound like your views are very much the same as Captain Cameron.
Well, I suppose that I certainly wouldn't agree with him on trade, but I think he does make good points on many strictly foreign policy issues. Now, he's termed an isolationist, but I disagree with that term because I think we can be for free trade, we can be for free cultural exchanges, immigration, that sort of thing. We don't want to bury our heads. Certainly there are a lot of problems out there in the world that the U.S. can help with, but I put the brakes on military interventions. Most Americans don't understand how hated we are in the world, and particularly in the Muslim world. And they say, well, why do these people hate us? And it doesn't help them. Politicians like Bush come out and say, well, they hate our freedom. No poll indicates that. The polls, repeated polls of the Arab world state that they don't hate us for our political freedoms, for our economic freedoms, even for our culture. Our technology is always foreign policy. It's our policy in the Middle East. Well, most Americans, they don't focus on the fact that, we overthrew a democratic, oriented government in Iran and brought back the Shah and the secret police. And we trained the Saba in torture. The CIA did this in a coup. The CIA-sponsored coup. And we've done this repeatedly. And we've intervened both directly and covertly in many of the affairs of many countries. And if we wanted to just put the Cold War aside and say, well, that was during the Cold War, but unfortunately we're still doing it. And the threat, the big threat that was a lot of us were justified on during the Cold War is over. And in my view, if there was, and you can argue about the Cold War if you want later, but if the Cold War, during the Cold War, the advantages of intervening were greater than they are now, and the costs were less, because both superpowers had nuclear weapons. They had vast amounts of nuclear warheads, and what they did was they intervened in each other's peripheral areas. The United States never intervened in Eastern Europe, which was vital to the Soviet Union, and directly, and Soviets never intervened directly in our region. They may have intervened in Nicaragua and Cuba by proxy, but both superpowers are very careful, so they managed the conflict so it wouldn't escalate to nuclear war. And the advantages, I suppose, were greater than they are now. Now with the Cold War over, we don't have this overarching enemy. We don't need to be intervening in a lot of these places, if we ever did. And the costs are much greater because you're getting blowback terrorism to the core, which the government is supposed to be their first line of defense. And this fits into the public choice model, too. The government is supposed to defend the citizens and the territory of the United States first. But we see that they don't because the government itself has an interest in this foreign policy, and various groups have interests in intervening. For instance, I'll give an example. NATO expansion would not have... Clinton thought NATO expansion was a bad idea. Then he figured out that certain key electoral states for the congressional elections in, let's see, 94 and the presidential election in 96, in Pennsylvania, Michigan, about 5 to 10% were ethnic voters, ethnic Eastern European voters. And they were a very crucial swing, because those are swing states in the election. And that was a swing group in the swing state. And all these people were very pro-NATO expansion. You think this is a foreign policy issue, right? No, it's a domestic issue, because these constituencies wanted to expand NATO. So what happened? He reversed positions and we expanded NATO. And so the public choice theory works here, too, because we see groups who are interested in intervening here and intervening there, pushing the policy of government. And are we more secure for it? I don't think so. And the government is worried about defending this country or that country, and not defending defending us here at home.
My name is Michael Adelstein from San Francisco, and I'd be interested in how you respond to the following argument again in favor of intervention in Iraq. And this came up in a discussion I had with Tim Starr, who I believe you'll be debating in September. And it starts with a dubious assumption, and that is that Saddam Hussein somehow was supporting Al-Qaeda and their attack. So given that, it goes to an individual level, and it says that if someone tried to shoot you and you wanted to defend yourself and they had a shield, a human shield, you would be justified in shooting back and killing that human shield if that's the only way you could defend yourself. So consequently, if Iraq was supporting terrorists who attacked the U.S., then the U.S. is justified in then attacking Iraq. And I had my own ideas about how to respond, but I'd like to hear yours.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think that nobody at the CIA or the State Department can find any link between the 9/11 attacks or Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. The neocons are pushing this, and there's never been any evidence to show that. There may have been a meeting here and there, but lots of groups meet with each other. I was once at a Brookings seminar, and this former congressman, this is before the Iraq War, and he was a liberal Democrat, but he was really pro-invading Iraq. So the first thing he does is, we have this little table, horseshoe table. First thing he does is pass around this picture of him shaking hands with Saddam Hussein in the 80s. Remember, Rumsfeld also went and shook Saddam Hussein's hand at the time he was gassing, at the very time he was gassing the people that are now telling, you know, comforting that he was gassing. But we were supporting him via Iran. But this congressman passed around this picture, and then he proceeds to say, well, there's been meetings, this ATA meeting in Czech Republic, alleged to have happened, but of course they never found any evidence that he was ever there at the time he was in Florida. Mohammed Atta was one of the hijackers, and they alleged that he met with Iraqi intelligence agent in Prague. But so he was touting this at this meeting, and I was tempted to ask him, well, if meeting with somebody means you're a terrorist, then aren't you a terrorist because you shook Saddam Hussein's hand in the 1980s. And I didn't say that because my friend was sponsoring the meeting. But I mean, you get these things, like if somebody meets with, and there's been no hard evidence that there's ever been any meetings. Now, the Al-Qaeda people who've been captured and the Saddam's loyalists who've been captured both say that there's been no cooperation between them. Some people in Al-Qaeda, these Al-Qaeda captives that we have, there have been Ladens associated with Bin Laden's aides, and they said that some people in Al-Qaeda wanted to cooperate with Hussein, but Bin Laden vetoed it because Bin Laden's major purpose for attacking the U.S. is because we support what he believes are corrupt secular governments in the Middle East. Well, Hussein is a corrupt secular government. I would also say that the terrorist groups, what they don't ever tell you, the terrorist groups that Saddam Hussein supported are all directed at Israel.
Yes, but given that assumption, how would you respond to the shield argument?
Well, I'm not sure how that applies, really. I mean,
well, that,
if I have two people attacking me and one guy standing behind the other guy telling him what to do, it's not a human shield, it's not an innocent person. If somebody's attacking me, then I shoot both of them, but I don't see that as the same situation.
Well, the analogy that was made was to the innocent Iraqis who were being killed with collateral evidence, collateral murders, and so the human shield, is not part of the plot to kill you.
Well, I don't agree that Saddam was ever a threat to the U.S., because he really wasn't. Yes.
How do you see the conflict in Iraq hopefully resolving itself short, intermediate, long term?
Well, if I were the president, I think the president could still get out of this with a modicum of dignity. What I would do, and I don't think they're going to do this, I would let the Iraqis choose what they want to do, and they would probably choose to either be a Swiss Canton-like thing with a decentralized government, where all three groups could rule themselves and have autonomy with a sort of a token federal government, or you partition the country. Because remember, the Sunnis are not really fighting in Iraq to bring Saddam back. because he was a brutal dictator. They're fighting because they're afraid that the Shiites, who have 60% of the population, are going to get payback, because remember, Sunnis rule the other two groups. And so they're fighting because they're scared. And if you give them their own area, everybody has their own area, and nobody's going to be dominated, then I think that's the best way to, that's the only viable solution. Because once you pop the cap off some of these fractious societies, they just disintegrate. You saw it with the Soviet Union, you saw it with Yugoslavia, et cetera. And they have a dictator that holds the country together. And when you mess with that, as heinous as the dictator is, you may have a worse situation. I think that's what we have in Iraq now.
I have a follow-up question. You're suggesting that that Iraq be split up. Isn't the real issue the oil revenues and how those oil revenues will be split up among these people? Because if you split it up,
well, I think you could reach an agreement with that. That's even if the oil is within another group's country, they might have to, you know, give them some of the revenues or revenue. You can work on that, but you see the problem is the partition is not even a solution that's being considered. But yeah, I mean, it may be as we get closer to the election, because I think Bush is going to have to jettison this whole mess if he wants to get reelected, and you may see some very creative things going on. So I don't rule out that they may eventually get to partition, but I think that could be worked out. It is a big issue, though. You're right.
Yeah. In Europe and in the Middle East, it seems like our support for Israel plays a big role in how they perceive us and our foreign policy. How do you see that fitting into the bigger picture?
Well, I think certainly Israel is one reason why the jihad against the United States is occurring. I don't think it's necessarily the main reason, because Bin Laden sort of added this as he went along. His major beef with the United States is for supporting corrupt secular regimes that he thinks defile Islam. He features himself as a reformer of the Islamic faith, and there have been a long history of these people in the Islamic faith. They think that the faith has become corrupt and that he's reforming it. So that's his major deep. But I think Israel, support for Israel is a factor, and I think we really need to question, that's another example of the public choice where we have a certain portion of the population that wants to give $3 billion and get a lot of support, but is it in our security interest? I mean, if we want oil in the Middle East, we certainly don't, supporting Israel doesn't get us there. And Israel has never been all that strategic. It's mainly a domestic issue. I think I better leave now because the next...